From the Lynn de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the third day of April, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson. He's at TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing, the elevator system right here in Champaign County. And then we'll take up the latest news. We'll look at what's been happening in Washington, D.C. with Nikki Budzinski, who held a listening session for her advisory group last week. I listened in on them, and we'll have an update on what she sees for the coming farm bill and other ag policies in D.C. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast, too, with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, all on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio, the farming world. Find us online at willag.org or look us up in your favorite podcast applications.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
A May corn for the day settled at 431 and three quarters. It was up 5 1/4. July 4 cents higher at 445. And December corn, $4.71 1/4, up 3 1/4 cents. May soybeans, 8 1/4 higher at 11.82 1/4. July 11.95 1/4, up 7.5. And November new crop up 7 3/4 at $11.84 3/4 cents. Greg Johnson from TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing, right here in Champaign County at the Elevator System, now joins us. Hi, Greg. Thank you for being with us. How are you today?
I'm doing well, doing well. I heard Wayne's final broadcast, or one of the final broadcasts yesterday, and it got me thinking that Wayne's always on Tuesday and always talking about Turnaround Tuesday, and I was just curious as to whether the Turnaround Tuesday effect really did have a actual statistical significance or not. So I went back and looked over the last 52 Tuesdays to see whether we've had a Turnaround Tuesday or not. And in corn, believe it or not, 27 times it did turn around, opposite of whatever Monday was. Tuesday did that, but it, unfortunately, 25 times it didn't. So basically 50%. It's a 50-50 thing on corn. So not really any credence to the Turnaround Tuesday in corn. Now, beans, a little bit different. 33 times we had a opposite effect on Tuesday than what we did on Monday. 19 times we didn't. So that's a 63% success ratio. So there is a little bit of Turnaround Tuesday-ish to the soybean market, but with corn, I don't think you want to go out and trade based on that theory.
Thank you for doing that. That had to be a lot of work. It also tells me farmers probably haven't been calling very much.
Yeah, the last 2 days we've been down hard, and yeah, farmer selling is basically non-existent. Yes.
Yeah, well, tell me about that trade since the USDA's Thursday reports last week, and that was the last trading day. So Monday and Tuesday were the first two of after that, which actually, you know, showed 90 million acres of corn, which was at the bottom end of the range and didn't seem too terribly bad. But once you started to do the numbers and really looked forward, I guess still something over 2.3 billion bushels as a carryout for 24-25.
Yeah, the 90 million caught a lot of traders by surprise. They were thinking 91, 92, some were even up as high as 93. So 90 was definitely friendly. Corn rallied 20 cents in the couple of hours after the report came out on Thursday as the funds decided to, you know, cover some of that short position. Guy getting caught on the wrong side of the report. But then we were reminded that the farmers are holding on to a lot of corn, and the farmers use that 20-cent rally as an opportunity to get some of their old crop corn sold, and we only finished 15 cents higher, which was still a good day on Thursday. We were hoping for, obviously, a little bit more this week, but Monday we were down sharply. Tuesday we were down sharply. Today, so far, we're bouncing back a little bit, but it's just kind of a reminder that there is a lot of old crop corn on hand, and so the upside is probably limited. And as you mentioned, too, the 90 million acres, even with a normal crop, if you use 180 bushel trend line yield on 82.3 million harvested acres, that gets you a 14.8 billion bushel corn crop, and demand is somewhere around 14.7, 14.8. So if we go into the year with a 2.1 carryout, if we have normal weather, we could expect something close to a 2.1 billion bushel carryout. So nothing real friendly there without a weather problem or without some unexpected demand showing up that hasn't shown up yet. So just a good reminder that supplies are comfortable on corn. A lot tighter on beans, but the corn number is very comfortable.
Two other items I think are impacting the corn market, and you can tell me by how much. I saw an item out of China that they were trying to restrict imports of corn in order to raise the price of corn there, trying to keep producers planting acres. And the other thing, of course, was avian influenza in the United States dairy herd rather than in the laying flocks, though there are there's avian influenza in the flocks as well, and you know, concerns about moving into the human population. Those two things seem to have had some impact, which is it's surprising, I think, on the high path, because it doesn't mean that cattle will not be eating, I guess. But I don't know. What's your view on those two?
Yeah, the Chinese have been buying basically Ukrainian corn. So this is a way restrictions are basically on any imported corn, but primarily it affects the Ukrainian corn going into China right now. So I think that's kind of a short-term impact. I think the Chinese want their farmers to feel like their government is doing something to try to protect their prices a little bit. So I think this is more of a short-term play. I don't think it has much long-term play. I think this is just a way to try to prop up the market short term over there. But as far as the bird flu is concerned, the fact that it migrated from poultry to cattle, and even one human report, guy got an eye infection in Texas, and they said that was avian influenza. So some concern. Hopefully it doesn't amount to anything, but we know in chickens, if they have to destroy flocks, that reduces demand for feed. And let's hope we don't have to reduce herds of cattle, to contain the avian influenza. So it's still early. Hopefully nothing happens, but it's obviously something that the market is starting to pay attention to. And as usual, uncertainty in general is not good for the market. And so that is definitely a concern. And the only other thing we've got this week is the jobs report Friday morning. Traders are thinking that maybe employment is stronger than what was expected, and if that's the case, the Fed may only need to cut interest rates twice the rest of the year. Right now, the expectation is that the Fed will cut rates three times in 2024, and obviously lower interest rates would certainly help the economy, and that would be good for commodities in general. But we'll have to see what the jobs report says Friday morning. So that's something else the market is keeping an eye on today.
Now, on soybeans, is there a general trending direction at this point for the size of the crop in Brazil, Argentina combined, bigger than last year, or even just in Brazil? Had it bottomed out at some point, and are analysts of the idea now that it's getting a little bigger as harvest is in the throes, or in near completion, I suppose. What do we know?
Yeah, the USDA has been pretty hesitant to lower their number very much. They're at 154 million metric tons for Brazil, and most of the private analysts were in that 146 to 150 range. But now there are some private analysts starting to come out closer to the USDA's 154. So maybe it's not as bad as what some of the private analysts thought early. And I think it boils down to acres. How many acres really did get planted? That's a big unknown. There's not a definite number. The USDA seems to think there's a few more acres that got planted and harvested than what some of the private analysts are using down there. And I don't know if we'll ever know exactly, but that seems to be the discrepancy between the USDA's 154 and everybody else's 148, 149. So, the recent rains have certainly helped the later beans. It's helping the corn that's getting the double crop corn that's gotten planted and pretty much all planted now. So they will eventually enter their dry period. They have a rainy season and a dry season, and they're hopeful down there, obviously, that they got the corn planted in time, that they can get it to pollination and maturity before the extremely dry weather sets in. So that's another thing that we'll be keeping an eye on.
Hey, thank you much.
Hey, thank you, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. Last week, Congresswoman Nikki Budzinski, a member of the House of Representatives Agriculture Committee, held a listening session for her advisory council in Monticello. I had the opportunity to ask her a few questions after the program finished, including some clarification on some points related to the conservation funding in the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act. That's the bipartisan infrastructure programming passed by the Biden administration. Some of her GOP colleagues would like to pull that money into the Farm Bill funding itself, which would eliminate all or part of the increase in conservation funding that came through the IRA. Budzinski had mentioned that the funding could be spent faster in order to keep that from happening. However, the funding wraps up over a period of years, including 2026, and doesn't finish until 2031. And I wanted to know how that was possible.
Well, I think we can get it accomplished because I'm going to be fighting for it because that supports family farmers. Our farmers in central and southern Illinois utilize these conservation dollars. We know that 3 out of 4 of these types of applications for conservation today are turned away by the USDA for lack of funding. With funding, which the Inflation Reduction Act put a historic investment of $19.5 billion in climate smart agriculture, we know that our farmers will take advantage of it, and we know that they'll take advantage of it by those deadlines that you mentioned. The USDA has been staffing up. My team has been in touch with USDA to make sure we can get those dollars out the door, and they have said, yes, they can do that. That's going to support our family farmers, which we have some of the best soil in the country. In order to maintain that, we have to encourage voluntary usage of our conservation programs in the Farm Bill. That's why I'm fighting for every dollar we can keep in conservation and have the conversation. Can we move some of that money into the baseline for future Farm Bills so we can ensure that it's there for our farmers in the next generation?
Two economic development questions, both related to the University of Illinois, ADM as well, the Tech Hub. What can you do in order to make sure or help that along, or do you get to watch through the end of this because the grants have been written, the funding is now in the hands of others?
Yeah, we've been a top cheerleader on this initiative in Washington. I brought the Economic Development Administrator who oversees these grants to my district so she could see firsthand all that we have to offer in central and southern Illinois, trying to put our best foot forward, being a good partner, like you mentioned, to some of our private industry partners, ADM, Premient, the University of Illinois, Parkland Community College, great economic development associations in Decatur and Champaign. This is an all-team effort. Our governor has been very involved in this. We're all pulling together to create what could be, if realized, in bioprocessing and fermentation in central Illinois, $200 billion industry. It's a lot of economic development, a lot of good jobs, a lot of growth. And that's what we want to see. That's what I'm fighting for. And I'm going to continue to be that top cheerleader to making sure we get those awarded to us in early summer.
Can you tell me one final question about the battle you are hoping to wage for a 5% yearly increase in research dollars?
Yeah, that's one of my top priorities in the Farm Bill is getting the America Grows Act done. Senator Dick Durbin is leading this in the Senate. It's bicameral. It's bipartisan. This is common sense. If we want to be able to compete with our adversaries, with China, if we want to compete with our partners, like in the European Union, in agriculture, I think we have to be able to invest in agricultural research and maintain our competitive edge for our family farmers. That's why I'm optimistic it's going to get done. It's bipartisan. It makes sense. It supports our family farmers. What's, you know, more to know about it? We should be able to do this.
That was Congresswoman Nikki Budzinski. She's a member of the House Agriculture Committee and had a listening session with her advisory council last Friday in Monticello. Let's turn our attention to the weather forecast now. We're joined by Drew Lerner. He is at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Gray, cold, little rain, kind of some snow here today. Really yucky, although at least we're not as bad as they were to the south of us and, of course, to the East Coast in my part of the world. What's the forecast look like here in the United States? And maybe we can start in the East Coast and cover what's happened there as well.
Yeah, well, we got a lot of active weather going on over there, that's for sure. A pretty aggressive storm system There's a double barrel low. So we've got one low pressure system over New Jersey, and we've got another one that's back over parts of northern Indiana. That latter one is the bigger of the two, but a very complex system producing some strong thunderstorms along the Atlantic coast. Some impressive snows occurring to the north of that into parts of New York and back across Ontario and southwestern parts of Quebec. And then, of course, we've got rain and snow mix across the heart of the Midwest. You know, this is about as close to winter as we can get, I think.
Not bad for April.
Well, it isn't. And it's been a while. I mean, we've been warm, and we're going to warm up again. So what the heck? Why not? We'll do this for a little while and add a little more moisture to the profile. You know, things actually look pretty good out there right now across the Midwest. If we were just a little warmer out there, we'd be planting pretty aggressively after the system abates from the region. But we're not quite going to be there yet. Maybe a little bit of farming activity will occur in a few spots. It's really still pretty wet to the south, by the way, and parts of the Delta and the Tennessee River Basin areas are getting a little bit behind on the field work down that way. Not a crisis, but something to kind of look at. And then back across hard red winter wheat areas, we're starting to hear some grumblings out that way that we're not getting enough moisture in the southwest plains. We do have a little storm system coming up here on Friday going to Saturday. That little storm is going to blow a lot of wind, and we'll probably get a little blowing dust going again in the southwest plains and probably have some wind gusts to 60 or 65 miles per hour. And then we'll send a little band of thunderstorms across the plains. But once again, it's not going to bring much moisture to the west, central, or southwest plains. A second system behind that is where everybody's putting their money down at the moment, but I'm not real comfortable with this system. It's supposed to develop over Texas. This would be Monday or Tuesday of next week, and maybe a little upslope precipitation. It'll start off in southeast Colorado or the Texas Panhandle, somewhere in that region. But the storm looks like it wants to move further to the east a little bit faster. And I've seen over the past few days, the models taking out precipitation from the southwest plains once again. And I really kind of think this is going to be a fizzler on us again. You know, this all just kind of reminds me of the high pressure ridge that we're going to see build into the central U.S. as we get into May. And so every one of these storms that we miss in the southwest plains just gets us a little closer to a problem, because once that ridge of high pressure starts building in the second half of May, if it's dry out there in the southwest, we're probably going to see that ridge kick in pretty quickly. We'll see a lot of warmth and beginning when that ridge starts to kick in, and it will be a bit dryish. And so anyway, the bottom line is we've got to do a little bit better with hard revenue wheat areas for the next couple of weeks, actually. And so we're going to keep our eye on that region. Remember, what we talked about a few weeks ago, talking about a strong ridge in the middle of the country during the summer months. And so the time is ticking away here. We've got about 6 weeks ahead of us where we could still do a lot of good with some rainfall. But after that, I think we're going to be warm and dry.
Anything that we need to discuss related to a small blurb on the drought monitor being the smallest geographic space across the growing regions in the last 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, you know, I think the most important thing is we have definitely shrunk down the drought across the North American continent, and that's great news. But there's still a lot of trouble out there. Mexico is still very much into a drought. Western Canada is still very much in a drought. And we have a few pockets of dryness in the U.S. But, you know, what will end up happening here is we're going to take a step forward here, and then we're going to take a couple steps back when we get into the summer this year, with the plains likely to get dry and warm. And I think we will see the drought come back again. But it'll be the last hurrah, I think. Because we're coming to the end of this 22-year solar cycle, at least as far as the solar maximum is going to occur here at the end of this year into next year. And I use that as kind of the end of this long series of extreme weather years. And once we cross over beyond the solar maximum, I think the potential of seeing persistent dry biased conditions like we've had in North America these past few years is going to be harder to perpetuate any further. So we will be seeing some improvement. Now, don't get me wrong, we could still have some regional dryness issues, But this broad-based Mexico to Canada dryness we've had in the last few years, that should become a thing of the past after this growing season.
We'll turn your attention to South America. A quick word on what's been happening, if anything. I think it's kind of status quo in Brazil and Argentina.
Yeah, definitely. Argentina looks really good right now. You know, there was a lot of folks who are worried about the flooding that occurred about 10 days ago in the southeast part of Argentina, but that wasn't a key corner soybean producing area. And we saw more damage done in Uruguay than in Argentina. And so I just don't think it was a big deal. We've seen a lot of improved weather since then. In Brazil, of course, it is status quo, just as you said. We have improved the moisture profile in Mato Grosso and Goiás. And that is great. As we get closer to the end of the monsoon, they have a much better moisture profile down deep in the ground that'll help carry them into the reproductive cycle. But Mato Grosso do Sul and Paraná, as well as Paraguay, still have a very dry soil profile. And they're going to get a little bit of relief in the coming week, but they're not going to get that subsoil moisture up to par. Now, one of the things that we did this past week is we released our outlook for April, and I think there's going to be a couple of frontal systems that will come out of Argentina and move into some of those dry areas in southern Brazil. So even though the rainy season will likely come to an end in the next couple of weeks, we will still have a chance for a few frontal systems to come through at the end of April and into early May that might just help keep that crop viable for a longer period of time. So we'll keep an eye on that. There's no guarantees of anything, but that's kind of where we're leaning right now.
And finally, we haven't talked about the Black Sea area over the winter because it's been winter there. What do conditions look like for the springtime?
Well, you know, if they were to plant right now, it'd be just like the Midwest, it'd be ideal. They've got marginally adequate moisture, actually most of it's adequate, I suppose. And they just need a little bit more warming and they could get out and start planting pretty aggressively. But the problem here is that we're not going to see a lot of precipitation in that part of the world for the next 10 days, and it will be warmer than normal. In fact, much warmer than normal in some cases. And so that's going to leave the door wide open for some additional drying. And that's going to catch the marketplace's attention, and we're probably going to see the soil firm up, and there's going to be some chatter out there. Oh, here we go. But, you know, one thing I do need to say is that in these years where we move from an El Nino to a La Nina, just like in the U.S., where we're going to see a ridge of high pressure, we will also see a ridge of high pressure build up in Russia. In past years, this ridge has been dominating the Ural Mountains region and has had the biggest impact on spring wheat and sunseed. And so those will be the crops that will be most at risk if the ridge does develop this summer. So this drying that's going to be occurring here near term might just bleed us into the ridge period here later this spring or summer and might become a bigger deal. But for right now, nobody should be panicking.
Hey, thank you much.
Have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand. Just click and play from the top of the webpage at willag.org or look under the podcast section there, and you'll find podcast files where you can hit subscribe to our podcast with the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, and the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy podcast. We're also on YouTube with those podcasts as well. Search them out in your favorite podcast application. Places like Apple and Spotify, and again, YouTube, as well as Amazon Music, Pandora, Audible, and many, many more. I'm Todd Gleason.